Welcome to Symbiosis to be Happening podcast season 2. Just so you know, you can visit us for more at www.symbiosis.com.
At least in the Western world, that's where the question, what's the purpose of a company? You know, no baby is born to make money. So what happens to humans that we get confused?
You are listening to Pedro Tarac. He is the co-founder of Sistema B and the former president of Sistema B International. Impact entrepreneur, global change maker, strategist and innovator, he is one of the strongest international voices in the regenerative and sustainable business. Pedro Tarac, thank you for being here with us. How are you?
Lovely. This is summertime here in the Southern Hemisphere in Argentina. And of course, it's holiday season. And I always say that what I do in this moment of the year is to sort of relax my mind.
Wow.
My intellectual side, and try to actually empty my brain, so I can be much more inspired by what happens with people in nature. So I'm having a great time and ready to go to Southern Patagonia, which is just an amazing, pristine area.
Wow. It's an honor, really, for us to share this conversation with you today. Thank you for your time, and thank you also to Symbiosis for this initiative of a podcast. Thank you, Tarac.
Thank you. To you and to Symbiosis, it's always so inspiring to connect the dots with Greece. And of course, to a business which is an impact business, right? Doing good for humanity. So it's lovely. Thank you very much.
First of all, Mr. Tarac, and having a look at your impressive background, in your career as a global change maker, where have you found the great inspiration and the energy? How do you recharge yourself?
Yeah, that's a good question for everybody, right? I would say that I have like three dimensions. One, people. I'm very, very curious and love empathizing with the soul of other people. So once, you know, you develop the skill or the way you connect to people, then you always get the good energies, or you actually get the energy from others. And as you're always exposed to people, then, and I'm personally exposed to very many, I would say that that's one huge source of inspiration, and not only inspiration, but of recharging energy. Then also, I would say that a second source is just being in pristine, or just being in nature. You know, there are very few places in the world that have been kept pristine, but you can always find them. And there, I would say, I also find a very powerful, source of energy. It requires a lot of silence, and it requires a lot of awareness of my body, at least, in nature, and something happens. It's like suddenly, you know, you connect with this other dimension, which is our earthly dimension, and, you know, feeling that you're part of the earth. And the third dimension of or ambit of charging energy is completely spiritual, and that can take place wherever, in a bus, in traffic, in nature. And that's when you basically connect with the cosmos, if you want, with your spiritual dimension. And it requires a lot of inner silence, and something happens. And many times it's the combination of these three dimensions. So I'm all the time stimulated. And of course, what happens a lot is that I exercise a kind of visualization of what future could look like, given the context where I'm living through, and giving my location in that context. And so that happens everywhere in the world. And I don't know, it's something that I've been developing since I was a kid. So now it's part of a regular practice, I would say.
Oh,
is that a good answer?
It's very, very impressive how you describe these three dimensions of connection. Let me ask you about one of these dimensions, the dimension of connecting with others. Where is the key for you to be able to connect truly with others?
Well, for me, it's going beyond, the language. It's feeling, the soul of the others. It's sensing the soul. It's bonding. It's actually, how would I say this in English? It's making mine the ambitions or the visions of others. The visualization, I wouldn't know how to say this in English, but visaging, the imagination of others and making that my own. And then one steps into how to make that happen in reality as if it were my own reality. So I remember being in a small little town in central China that I couldn't speak any of the languages, but I met the mayor of that place, because this happens all the time, you see. And I met this guy. I knew no one around there. And someone who did speak English from Hong Kong said that I was from Argentina, and we had a conversation before on what I normally did in changing the DNA of the economic system at the business level, at the government level. And suddenly I was with the mayor, and I remember that, I don't know what happened to me, but he shared the big challenges of this small little town, and I made it mine and started to connect on how I would respond to those challenges. And suddenly we both were moved emotionally into tears with this guy that I wasn't able to, at least use a language, a formal language. So we just hugged each other, and that was it. I would share my, my understanding through a couple from Hong Kong. Mm. And I never saw these guys again in my life. My sense is that, at least this is the way I understand life in general, is that the notion of individualism is very, very, very limited. I come from a city that has the second highest rate of psychotherapies in the world after New York, Buenos Aires, and the second highest rate of psychologists in the world as well. And very much focused on that you have to solve your problems within yourself. And very much Freudian. Now, once you start understanding that you don't end in the borders of your body, that your energy actually reaches out as far as you allow yourself, that means that the me becomes a me-we. And once you start understanding the me-we, you also start understanding the me-we-earth, see, as part of the earth, as part of nature. And of course, you can go beyond that, and you can go to the me cosmos, right? To wherever you want to reach. And once you develop that understanding into skills, then you start living the beautiful experience of bonding, but also belonging to the different dimensions. So, and that leads to rethinking how we're organized as humanity to enable the full experience of life for individuals, in particular in a context where the me or the I has been exacerbated by the system. So anyway, I could go on and on.
No, it's amazing how you describe that, and also talking about Sistema B, but not only. How do you think that the concept of purpose can be inspiring for companies and also for people to go through these complex times?
Well, yes. In your question, there are several components. you speak about business, but and people and complexity, right? So people, there's no one on the surface of this earth who's been repeated, and there must be a reason for which one is born, the meaning of why one is born, right? Now, how to figure that out requires a lot of exercise, but basically it requires to formulate all the time a crucial question. What for? What for have you been? What for you're born? It's not why only, you see, the why in English. In Spanish, we have these two, this para qué and the por qué. These are two different questions that can be formulated. I've been very lucky to have parents that have asked me, since I was a very small child, they've asked me, what for? What's the meaning? In Spanish, para qué? And it's the least formulated question, because we're very good in justifications. Why? In the justification dimension of the question, why? We're very good in describing what. We're very good in how, when, where. But the skill that needs to be developed has to do what for. And those who actually have developed that skill and know how to, you know, figure out a raison d'être in French, a reason for which one is born, are the ones that, connecting it with business and with the market, can become the most competitive. Why? Because the person that knows its own uniqueness and singularity certainly will develop the strength that is necessary for a new differential in the market. But it's also in society. It's the differential that each human being has anyway, just because they're born. Only that you have to accept that you have that differential, that uniqueness. And you know what? It sounds even quite high risk to be unique in this world, because you go beyond standards. And we come from a system where we have standardized almost everything. We have classified almost everything. There's some countries that classify those who are immigrants according to color, race, whatever. Even that, we classify. Why? Because we need to simplify, because we think that as we're very many, we need to handle the complexity through simplification. Now, simplification is not the response to complexity. Mm-hmm. It's the response to complication. So the big challenge is accept the complexity. I'm mentioning the word complexity because you mentioned in these complex context or times.
Totally.
So what I feel is that if people know who they are, what for they were born, and they develop the everything according to that what for, then, you know, life becomes, yes, sometimes challenging, but very fruitful, because you're always responding to the most deepest source of raison d'être. And then you organize yourself for that. That as an individual. The same question is valid for a company. Now, there's a lot that we need to connect. I don't know how you say it in English, but the Enneagram, you can actually use it to understand that uniqueness of individuals, but then also of teams, and then of companies. And this is already happening. There are apps for that. And so I think as a new differential in the market, yeah, I would say for competitiveness, more and more people in business will develop the skills. And more people who want to actually be more successful within business and business in the market will need to develop these kinds of skills. Yeah. I would say that these are times which are fascinating, because we're redesigning success. And redesigning success has to do with individuals and in companies that do unique goodness for the world and for the planet. Are people who are able to move hearts because they're connected. People who actually develop their, not intellectually, but in a holistic manner. They develop their skills to know what for are people who are connected definitely with their emotions. And once you're connected with your emotions, you move hearts and you reach out. And of course, naturally, your me expands into the me we, and you naturally develop community, common unity with others. And of course, you also start connecting with your context. And isn't the earth the most dominant context in life? So it enables us to learn from the earth, not only become an environmentalist, which is being an environmentalist is something that is by, I would say, it comes from the older times where we had to actually, upgrade the value of the environment. This is something different. This is belonging to the earth and learning from the principles of the earth and acting as if we were also part of the earth. That means acting as part of complexity, that's the earth. Acting as part of diversity, that's the earth. Acting as singularity, that's what you learn from the earth. The earth is a singular, unique planet in this galaxy, and perhaps it's unique, at least, in the cosmos. Acting as part of a long-term framework and not short-termism, and recognizing the imperatives of the earth as part of nature, as part of reality. So this you can express in a business model, you can express in the economic policy tools, you can actually translate all this into a new design of how we are organized, micro and macro, and how actually we build together the legacy that life needs. So on Earth, I mean, this is the way I see, this is my cosmology, if you want. Mm. And that's the reason for which, with other friends, we started System B. It's a new system. It's not the left vis-a-vis the right or capitalism and anti-capitalism. It's the evolution of what we've learned from the different stories and histories of how we get organized.
Wow. That's stunning how you describe this cosmology. And thank you. Thank you for sharing with us. Tarak, what connections do you think that can be found between the Greek philosophy, if any, and the contemporary business practice?
Well, I'm not a philosopher myself. I don't think so. At least I'm not a student of the Greek philosophy. Mm. I love it. Everything I learn, I love, and I'm fascinated. And so there are different responses to your question. I love Socrates. I would say he was the expert in the questions, in questioning. He was the expert in teaching rather than, you know, just saying how things are and how one has to adopt mental patterns to think. He was the guy who would just ask questions. Interestingly enough, he would ask the questions in the market. He wouldn't go to the Acropolis, if you want. He would go to the Agora. Why? Because that's the space, that was the space and still is, if we still recover the notion of a market. That's the space with the most numerous interactions. That's the space where it's not only the space where demand and supply meet, it's the space where you can also build trust, collective trust. And if, I don't know, for me, that's my connection to the Greek philosophy. And that's the one that has most practical effects in the evolution of, I would say, business and macroeconomics. Because at least in the Western world, that's where the question, what's the purpose of a company? You know, no baby is born to make money. So what happens to humans that we get confused and we think that our purpose is making money? And then with money, you obtain materials and you obtain power, but that's not the reason for which one is born.
Wow, amazing. And yeah, talking about how to materialize this purpose, could you please share some examples of organizations that you have found along your career that you consider iconic or different in the way they do business?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I'm a small investor in different companies. They're all what we call impact companies. They're solution driven. And in fact, I'm a small investor in a company called Guayaki, which is a energy, I would say a natural, organic, and fair trade energy beverage that you can find in Canada, the US, and in Chile. And it's based out from the mate, the yerba mate, which is a leaf from a tree from the Atlantic forest in Brazil, Paraguay, and Argentina. Now, the purpose of this company is the regeneration of the forest and of a sense of communities. That's the purpose, a sense of communities that depend, rely on the forest in those three countries. So that purpose is what we optimize, we maximize. And that's the priority. So that's what leads us in our decisions, our market decisions. That purpose is in the center of our core business, and it's also protected legally in the articles of incorporation of the company. So there you have a very concrete case that actually frames the entire business according to the purpose. So the way we measure success has to do the extent to which we reach that purpose. Of course, you have more specific indicators, but for example, how many hectares expand thanks to the business model? It's not CSR. It's not that we make money somewhere and then with that money we allocate to do conservation or to do regeneration separately from the business model. So the way we achieve it is that we pay from 40 to 60% more the value, the market value of the yerba mate, which is as long as our suppliers harvest leaves from standing trees. So what happens is that incentive, that commercial incentive in our suppliers are indigenous communities and campesino cooperatives. These are small farmers cooperatives. They get a commercial incentive, their need is to expand the forest, because the more trees of yerba mate are inside the forest, then they have more income. And of course, the leaves from the tree have the properties of the forest, of the entire ecosystem. The alternative to a forest-driven, I would say, commodity like the yerba mate is the, single crop, plantations. And they can be organic, and they can be also, and the majority are just like the soya or the wheat, they're just large-scale plantations. But those reduce the properties of the elements which are in the leaves, because it's not the forest, it's man-made, if you want, harvesting and production and harvesting. So the way we manifest the purpose has to do with the inner calls of the founders, that actually the founder, who's an Argentine, saw how the forest would disappear when he was very, very young, and he would cry, because he could see how, the contemporary industrial revolution agriculture, which is the green revolution, green in between, colons, but it's the green revolution that made the expansion of the modern agriculture, which was the simplification of a complex ecosystem, which was the forest. It was simplified to one single crop and reduced to what that means in terms of ecosystem wealth. So basically, he said, the day I grow up, I will do whatever to make the forest come back. And that was his inner call speaking to him. It wasn't himself. It was what he would become like. He became like a channel for what he was feeling, see? And today, it's a very, very successful company. And I always share my results. You know, the company, when it was becoming 25 years of age, had already been the facilitator of all kinds of stakeholders, you know, investors, collaborators, the shareholders, the clients, the suppliers, together, achieving more than 60,000 hectares of South Atlantic forest that have been regenerated. So it's the size of Paris, for example. And that's just one single company enabling. It's an enabling company for a solution that we all need. And over about 1,300 families that either returned back from favelas or very poor, vulnerable neighborhoods from urban areas, or did not need to leave, which is a typical situation. And in 6 years of my investment, I noticed an average of 100% increase in the share value at an annual rate. And this happens because the values of the shares are matched with the valuation, the social valuation. And that's pure beauty. The company does not expand its products to new markets only to have more markets, but it expands the products to new markets so the forest expands back. You see, so it's a logic that I would say reveals that there is a different way of doing business and enabling all the market stakeholders to be part of the solutions that we need as societies. And there, what I would say is that Guayaki is an enabling company. It's an enabling company for the purpose, enabling company for shareholders, enabling company for societal needs, for ecosystem needs. It's an enabling company. And that's what a purpose-driven company does. So anyway, that's just one example.
Listening to that is absolutely incredible. And thank you for explaining us more about that. And just talking about Symbiosis, how did you know about a company? And from your perspective, what have you known about the vision driven?
Yeah, well, I met the family owners about 8 years ago. And anyway, it was, you know, I was actually sharing what we were doing in Latin America with Sistema B, the owners used to have another company before, which became the first B Corp of Greece. Mm-hmm. Apparently, they were inspired of this business model and of this purpose-solution-driven company. And with the son of the owner, then Thanos, we started to understand each other very, very well in a new role of business, also in Greece. And then they sold that their previous company and they started with Symbiosis. And I was fascinated with the potential of Symbiosis, also again, using the market forces and business force for solutions to the regeneration of I would say culture, regeneration of ecosystems through products. But also I noticed that just like what happened with Guayaki, they didn't have like a border, because once you have a purpose, then you start realizing that that purpose can lead you to different business units or different dimensions, call it the way you want. And then you transform those dimensions into units. So one can be communications. Another one can be cultural activities, but their core business has to do with teas, right? And with honey, which is very unique. Because, you know, the Greek islands are very unique in this planet to start with. But the cultures also are very singular. So that's what attracted me. And of course, as I was sharing with you, Ruben, I'm a people's person, you see. And I've been in Greece, visiting Greece since I was very young, because of some family ties and or connections. When I was very, very young, my grandmother would share with me stories of her experience in Greece, and she had lived 10 years in Athens basically coordinating an initiative for the rescue of Greek and Armenian Christian orphans from the genocides and during the Ottoman Empire. And she would go for holidays to the Greek islands and basically sail or swim. And those stories were part of my stories when I was a kid. And so when I became an adolescent and I had the opportunity to travel alone, I would go to the Greek islands. And from there on, something would tell me I have to return back to Greece all the time. And but of course, one thing is to be a visitor, and another thing is to share. And that's what I started doing with the movement of social entrepreneurs in Greece. And that's where we met with Athanasios. Yeah, and that's how everything kept on developing. So and then I met his parents and the teams, and I see in Symbiosis the values that I have. Yeah. That I have as mine, the combination of a meaning, beauty, adding value more so than just profitability, creating a legacy, being a reference for others to be inspired. It doesn't mean in the same industry, but it's others to follow suit, building community, moving hearts. I see all of that in the family, but also in the team. Of Symbiosis.
Thank you. Thank you again for sharing and being so open to this conversation. And I would like to ask you a last question, just not to abuse from your time. And as a global change maker, strategist, and innovator for many, many, many business, and also having met a big quantity of people, could you share a final anecdote or a short experience that you have observed that could inspire us about this concept of purpose? It can be from any time. I know it's a strange question, but probably it's a good way to finish the conversation, this high, high quality conversation.
Well, yes. I have a couple of stories that have actually enabled me to open up that dimension to myself. One was when I used to be a professional, an environmental legal professional. I was invited to one of the side events of the Inter-American Development Bank General Assembly in Nagoya in Japan. And I remember having arrived, with a jet lag, and the evening before, or sorry, the night before, I had to speak to the financial world in participating in that event, the World Japanese. I remember having, being really awake at around 4:30 in the morning. So I had decided that I wanted to take a cup of coffee. During those times, in general, there were not so many Japanese that spoke English or another language. So when I went to the reception of the hotel that early, I said, coffee, and I thought they were understanding me with the word coffee. So the person at the reception made a indication on where to go. And there was a very high door, which was very simple, very elegant, that I had to push. So, and I was dressing up, like it wasn't a pajama, but it was very informal. So, and very sleepy. So I pushed the door, and suddenly I saw a huge hall room with round tables completely ready for the breakfast, very elegant. They were white cups and everything was ready. And next to every single chair, there was someone kneeling and in silence praying, as in a sense of meditation. These were about 500 people, and everybody was in silence, and they were all dressed up in dark. They were all men and dressed up in dark suits. I thought, this is not the place I have to be. So I immediately went back to the reception. I shut this huge door, went back to the reception, And the man, who was very gentle, decided to come with me to wherever the coffee was being served. And he took me to the same place. But this time, he sort of pushed me a little bit inside this hall, this huge room. And I suddenly realized that I was alone, looking at these 500 people, all kneeling and meditating. And suddenly, a man who was quite elderly made a move with his head. And they all stood up and sat at their tables. I knew that I couldn't do anything there. I went back to my room. So at 8 o'clock, I was introduced to my cultural translator who did speak English. Now, the first thing I did was to ask what was going on. And he said, Pedro, all these people are CEOs or owners of large financial Japanese international companies. They need to center themselves in silence from their me to the whole, to be able to adopt quality decisions every single day. Well, anyway,
wow,
it was very powerful for me. Today, I can understand the full meaning of what she told me. But then it was a door opening for me that they were seeking for the meaning as a reminder of their meaning, of their center, of the energy source, the inspiration source, as a centrality of their daily decision-making moments.
Oh, it's a beautiful anecdote. Very, very beautiful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was in way back in 1994. So that was the first time that personally I was able to start getting closer, connecting my spiritual world to my business world, my professional business world. It was the connection of these two universes that normally I had sort of separated. The spirituality was more closer to religions, and business was more mental and only, you know, form driven. So, which is fine, but it was not connected, you see. And that was, yeah, many years ago, but very significant. Another story that I can share with you, if I may, was already in this century, I would say, around 2003, when I used to be in charge of a philanthropic organization called the Avena Foundation, and where we would look for true leaders from society, from civil society, and also business. And I had met an indigenous woman, a leader in the northwest of Argentina, of the Quechua-speaking culture, the Koja. And we were discussing the possibility of funding a micro banking system, which was eventually later was funded, to little small communities in the high mountain plateau called, in Spanish, Puna, the Puna de Atacama, but on the Argentine side. And I remember that part of the funding would go to these communities, that they became like micro banks, and also as the space for their own community democracy to decide where to invest their money, how to invest it. And it was all community led. And I remember that I was struck emotionally, and I had a aha moment when, well, Mrs. Doña Rosario, Mrs. Rosario, this amazing woman, I asked her, how did they make investment decisions? And she said, it's very, very easy. When someone has an idea that wants to go ahead, they just consult to the community, and they become like the resulting vector, if you want, of what the community feels that as the next phase of, or what would add value to the community. And then, you know, if it will be some kind of a company or initiative of a micro business that would be driven by natural resources, they will ask, how do you return back the energy and the resources back to nature, to the Pachamama? So if you think about it, what we speak about circularity and circular economy, it's part of that vision of the indigenous cultures and what the indigenous wisdom brings to us. So that was another door-opening moment for me, and learning from the indigenous communities of how you do, well, basically you do market testing. You know, you have to translate to our Western language, but basically that's what they do. They do market studies and market prototypes, and then they return back to nature what they actually extract from nature. They try to use the less energy possible to achieve the most. I mean, you have all the principles of circular economy with the cultural elements. So yeah, these were my main two door openers of what later became my contribution of the co-creation of Sistema B.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Tarak, for sharing these door openers, anecdotes, and thank you in general for your time, for sharing your extraordinary, stunning knowledge around Symbiosis T. And thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your interest. And I truly hope it opens up something in the bridging between what the Greek philosophers taught all of us and the opportunity that the Greek business has to translate that philosophy into new business models in the contemporary world. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you again. Thank you very much, Mr. Tarak. Thank you.